Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delcherie Gladden. I'm a journalist, editor, and author of over 30 published novels. And on this week's episode, I have Rosemary Wattola Traumer, and she's going to be talking about her newest book of poetry, All the Honey. Rosemary, go ahead and introduce yourself.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm impressed that you have written over 30 novels. So that's the first part of my bio. I'm Rosemary Wattola Traumer. I live in the Four Corners. I'm in Placerville on the banks of the wild and mighty San Miguel River. And I'm a poet. I've been writing poems since I was a little girl, but I've been writing poems every day since 2006, a daily writing practice, but then also turned into a daily sharing practice. And you can read my daily poems on my blog, 100fallingveil.com, all spelled out. And this is my 13th book of poems, and I'm really excited about All the Honey with the support that I've gotten from this publisher and the enthusiasm with which it's been received.
Yeah, I'll definitely jump into my enthusiasm for this. I really enjoyed this book. But I did want to ask you about the publisher. I was reading in the beginning how this book came together. And you mentioned in the opening that you weren't sure if you could pair the ideas that they were asking you about. And so tell us a little bit about what this book is and where it came from, because I think that really helps put the poems in perspective when people start reading this.
When the publisher first came, it's Samara Press, Elizabeth Dilley, and Stephen Nightingale. And they called me just over a year ago and said, we'd love to do your next book. And I was in a strange space at the time. My son, Finn, took his life in August of 2021. And then my father died 3 months after that. So I was in a very heartbroken and enlivened state, both, I think we could say. And all of the poems that I had been writing were about that. It was very difficult to write about anything that wasn't that. So when they said we'd like to do a book, I thought, well, it's a little too soon to do a book about grief. I don't think I have enough perspective on that yet. And yet it felt almost impossible to do a book about anything else, because that was certainly the milieu that I was living in. And we could say that the poems that I'd written before this are poems about the natural world, poems about falling in love with the world. Because I write every day, they tend to feel like they're daily poems. I write about spatulas and the rain in the field and losing my car key, you know, things that feel like very daily environments. So when they said, do you think we could do it all? Could we have a book that combines the poems about grief and poems about falling in love with the world? And I said right away, no, I couldn't picture it. But I told them, instead of saying no outright, I said, I'll think about it, which I'm so grateful then for the time and space they gave me to think about it, because a few weeks later, I had a vision, which I still feel like I need to point out, this isn't a normal thing for me, although right after Finn died, it did happen with some regularity, but in this vision, my father and my son came and they carved into my bedroom wall in all caps these words, we love you, and beneath it, all the honey. And I knew right away that that was the title for the book. They were giving that to me. And I thought, I love that, but what is that supposed to mean? And wrestled with it for a day and eventually came to this, I suppose, metaphoric understanding that all the honey that's ever been made has come from the bitterness of the pollen that feeds the worker bees and the sweetness of the nectar that fills the honeycomb. And in this way, I understood that the book, like life itself, like honey, is asking us to meet it all at once. And I think part of me would have liked to have put it into distinct separate books, right? Here's the book about grief. Here's the book about joy and happiness. But the truth of life is that we are asked to meet it all at once. And what a joy it became then, Dalshiri, to bring that full spectrum into a single collection and to let poems about something super goofy, like dancing around in my kitchen in 4-inch lucite stilettos pretending I'm Dolly Parton versus a poem about 2 days after Finn died, and letting them have a conversation, because that is what it is to be alive. You know, we are asked to meet grief and joy and elation and despair and epiphany and sorrow at the same time.
I have to say that's one of the things that I found really beautiful about this book is that blend of the two. And I was interested to see how it was organized when I started reading after having read your opening explaining what you just went over and whether they would be mixed or whether it would be here's this section and here's this section. And it was a surprising journey to go through it and see that mixture of those little moments that bring happiness and then some of those deeper, more difficult sets of emotions to process. And I found it very relatable on a lot of levels. I haven't experienced losing a child, and there were a lot of times that I got very emotional reading because I think you did touch on a lot of things that, sorry.
Dalshiri, thank you for being so vulnerable with the poems. Thanks.
But there were, like, I think other areas of grief in my life that a lot of this really spoke to me.
Yeah. Oh, friend. It is such a gift to hear you be so open-hearted in your way that you met them. Thank you for that.
Well, sorry, I didn't expect to get emotional just talking to you about it.
Well, I probably should have warned you up front too that I don't think I've ever done a reading or interview without crying, or, you know, like only 4%. So the chances of me crying were about 96% too. So.
Well, good to know it's not just me. I do tend to be an emotional person. But this way, when I started reading this, I think I got through like the first poem. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be hard to get through. In a good way. Because it did just really connect with me. And the last few years, some of the stuff going on with my family and with my kids, and it's pushed me a lot emotionally to kind of learn how to work through that better and to help my kids working through some of that. And so much of what I connected with throughout the book with the poems were those moments of, you know, finding the little bits of joy within some really difficult times and taking more of a look at where those emotions are coming from when you're in the middle of them, because that's often a very difficult thing to do right in the middle of when things are so intense, mm-hmm. and take that step back. I really enjoyed that about this, that it gave me a chance to look at some of my own experiences through the lens of what you've been through and what you're communicating with the readers. And one of those, like you said, I was like, oh, I'm going to pick, you know, two or three poems that I really want to talk to her about. And right now I just have sticky notes everywhere in this. I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to keep this to 30 minutes? So that'll be a challenge. But right off, one of the ones that really struck me was The Bailiff of the Heart. And if you would like to read it, I would love that. And then we can discuss it a little bit.
I would love to. I would also like to say that what you're talking about, this difficult task of showing up when things are difficult and being available to small moments of joy in difficult times, I do think that a daily writing practice has helped me with that enormously. That just the act of showing up every day to a blank page and writing something is an invitation to meet it all. And it helps, I think, to have done it for so many years when the stakes were so low, or let's say at least much lower, so that when the stakes were so high, you know, in this most difficult period of my life so far, that I still had a yearning even, but also just a habit of opening and noticing what's here. And to notice what's here is always more than, there is always some spectrum available, even in the dark, when it seems most full of despair or most full of joy. So,
yeah.
Okay, The Bailiff of the Heart. I'm glad you chose this poem. I haven't ever read it out loud, so I'm excited to. The Bailiff of the Heart. The Bailiff of the Heart wears comfortable shoes. She knows she'll be standing outside the heart's door for a long, long time, while inside the chamber, the many voices of love deliberate. It's never so simple as innocent or guilty. The heart is full of what ifs and if onlys, and the jury's aware of what's at stake, nothing less than everything. The bailiff doesn't mind. She can hear them in there bellowing, pleading, reasoning, stonewalling. She gets them water. She tells the court to wait. It's her job to protect their conversation. She long ago gave up believing in justice. Still, he believes in love.
Thank you for sharing that. One of the things that I really connected with in this poem, particularly, was just that sense of it's okay to give yourself that time and space to work through all of those just big and sometimes heavy or exciting emotions. There's so much that goes into relationships and understanding what you feel for others in the happy moments and the sad moments. And it's hard and it takes time. And I love the title of that with the bailiff of the heart, that idea of there's a protective nature there. And it felt like, giving yourself permission to take that time. And I think that's something that a lot of time we don't give ourselves or other people don't give us often enough.
So beautifully said, Dalshree. Thank you. I think that is at the heart of the poem, is that permission. And part of the sweetness of this poem is that my friend Samantha Wright is a bailiff in Silverton. And so I loved listening to her talk about what it was to be a bailiff and how she protected the conversations that were happening. And it got me very excited about what it is to be in the midst of those big feelings that go both ways, right? And how sometimes you can think this is the right thing, and the other part of us is like, this is the right thing, and they're in a big argument, and it seems like there's a right and a wrong, and it seems like it can be so stark, like innocent, guilty, which of course is never quite true. I find myself that there's so many ways to see it, so many perspectives that can be right, and especially when we bring compassion to a situation. Of course you're angry. Oh, of course, you feel betrayed. Oh, of course you acted this way. And this is the first poem in the book. And I think it does set up that we're going to talk about love in this book. It's going to be a book about love. It is going to be a book about how messy it can be. And it is going to be a book about taking time to process what is it that's happening in our hearts. How do we then take that time and then meet the world?
I love the way you put that. The idea of it being a conversation with ourselves, and that conversation can take a long time to get through. It's not always as fast of a process as we might like it to be.
And probably almost never complete. Like the conversation goes on.
Ongoing, yes.
Yeah, how many times did you walk away from a conversation and 5 minutes later, or a day later, or a month later, you think, oh, that's what I should have said. Oh, that's what I really meant. Oh, that's what she meant. Oh, it
Yeah,
goes on and on.
it does. It takes time for all the components to sink in. And, like with most things, you're always processing and learning and working through it. And I think that's a beautiful process overall. So, one of the other poems that really stuck out to me was Hope. And it's also toward the beginning of the book. But it was one that, as I was reading through page by page, stuck out to me and made me stop and reread it a couple of times. And so I would love to have you share that one as well.
You bet. This is hope. Hope has holes in its pocket. It leaves little crumb trails so that we, when anxious, can follow it. Hope's secret. It doesn't know the destination. It knows only that all roads begin with one foot in front of the other.
I think with this one, like with the bailiff, that being an ongoing conversation, one of the things that I really enjoyed about this poem was that sense of journey. I think we all have times in our lives where it is really hard to hold on to that hope. And it does feel like, you know, you said the holes in the pockets, like maybe it's just slipping out and disappearing. But you provide this great visual of, you know, even if it feels like it's kind of disappearing from your life, what it's really doing is leaving those crumb trails. And I loved that visual image of that. And that brings to mind, you know, Hansel and Gretel. But just that sense of like, this is, it's not disappearing. It's reminding you that you're traveling somewhere on that journey, mm-hmm. and you'll find your way back to it. You'll just keep going. And that hope's never truly going to disappear, even if there are times when it feels very low. The sense of that there being a destination. I think especially in Western society, that sense of reaching a finish line, completing a project, getting to the end of something. We have that mindset a lot. And thinking about things in a different way is difficult at times, that it's not necessarily, you know, we're trying to get somewhere specific, you know, get to the end of the grief, get to a new point in life, reaching those milestones, thinking of it, of whatever it is that a person is going through as more of a journey of working along that path and following that trail. That just really stuck out to me.
Thank you for that. I love hearing. I'm so grateful for you to hear your responses to the poems. It's a joy to hear them. And I'm thinking as I'm listening to you talk about how this poem does in some way reflect what I think about how we want to know where we're going, and yet we get to see only this step right here, right? As far as the crumb trail goes. And crumb trails, as we know, never last long. You know, they get eaten right away. So you can only follow it in an immediate moment. And yet there's also the same time that here I am in this specific moment, and there's at the same time this larger path that we don't have access to. We can't see it. And hope itself can't see it. That actually kind of excites me to think that there is uncertainty inside of hope, and that even hope itself isn't attached to an outcome. I think often our hopes are, I hope I feel better. I hope you do well. I hope you don't die, right? And instead, I feel like this poem is an invitation to bring it in really close, just right here. How do I meet this next moment? And hope lets us just meet it that far, just that far. It doesn't have to be any further along the path, and certainly not at a destination. Just right here. Let's meet this right here.
I think that sense of moment, of being in the present, I think it's something that people are more aware of as a concept today. I think it's still very hard to put into practice, because it's not something, at least in a lot of Western societies, that we're used to doing. Right. And like your writing, I think it takes that daily practice.
Well, and I think that poems really are the story of a moment. Not all poems, but we could say maybe most poems, and we could certainly say the poems I write are the story of a moment, whereas a novel is the story probably of a larger period of time, or a movie, right? We're going through time, but a lyric poem is the poem of just what is it to be alive right now? That's all that the poem is trying to do, is touch this right here. And that would not be true necessarily of a narrative poem, but of a lyric poem like Hope or The Bailiff of the Heart, where it's not trying to tell a story. It's just trying to say, this is it right here. This is the story of right now. So I think, you know, poems are a really darn good practice for that kind of mindfulness and presence. Not to write a good poem per se, just the act of writing a poem at all is a dedication to being present.
I love that. Poetry is not something that I have a lot of experience with, but I've had quite a few poets recently that I've interviewed, and it's piqued my interest to see if maybe I could use that in a daily writing practice type of way. I don't think I'll ever be any good at it, but I struggle to find time to write on my larger projects. I'm like, maybe this could at least be a good practice of almost a meditation of just getting me mm-hmm. in that sense of I need to take a moment. The last poem I wanted to ask you about really just flows so well from what you were saying, because it's filling my purse with commas. And to say the title first piqued my interest, because as a writer and an editor, I hate commas. Right. They're such a pain. Nobody agrees on their use half the time. And it's like, I'll put them in and someone will take them out and then one will go back in somewhere else. Commas. Commas are so much fun to deal with as an editor. But the way you talk about them and use them in this poem, I just loved. And so I would love to have you share that one, and then we can chat about my love-hate relationship with commas.
I would love to read this poem. I do want to say, as you were talking about how you wouldn't ever be any good at writing poems, which I loved hearing you say that, quite honestly, because it took a long time for me to relax my expectation that I had to write a good one. And if I wasn't going to write a good poem, then I wasn't going to write at all. And so that meant I really didn't write a lot. I let that fear of not being good enough get in the way. And it wasn't even a fear of not being good enough, it was a fear of not being good. And so I think that my whole relationship to writing changed, Delshiri, when I began writing poems to be true instead of good. And I made my invitation to myself, just write the next true thing. And when I told myself it doesn't have to be good, but it has to be true, it changed everything for me about writing and opened it up and made it, honestly, a practice that's so full of life and energy and epiphany and surprise, as opposed to critique and expectation and frustration. Not that I don't still have those, let's be honest, but that takes a back seat for sure to what's true now, what's here now, what's the next true thing. And that's always energizing, and that's always available to me. I can always say something true. I can't always write something good.
So, love that.
Just thrilled by your little comment about it's never going to be good. I was like, then you're in just the right place. Stay there. Keep that up. Okay. Filling my purse with commas. All afternoon, each time I think I should hurry, I pull out a comma. Such humble punctuation. And I invite it into the moment. And the comma does what it always does, which is to invite a pause, a small pause, of course, a pause long enough to breathe, to notice what else is happening. A slight suggestion that right here is a perfect place to rest. Funny, I never noticed before that the comma itself looks as if it's bowing, nodding its small dark head to what is, encouraging us to find a brief silence, and then, thus refreshed, go on.
Thank you. I think one of the things that caught my attention with this one so much is that this is something I struggle with a lot, taking those little breaks and setting aside the to-do list and just letting myself be still and breathe for a minute. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that visual idea of these commas that I deal with on a day-to-day basis, working in a newspaper and editing other people's stuff. And I'm just like, oh, commas. And putting it in that sense of, like, you know, if you really could just have a pocket, a purse with these little reminders of just stop for a moment, take a break, rest, breathe. What that can do for you.
It doesn't have to be a full meditation, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to sit for 30 minutes. You could just pause for 30 seconds, yeah. Which even that sometimes feels unavailable.
Right? It does. It does.
Yeah, and that, I know. Oh,
it's been a lot of my life lately.
I know. I get it. I want to point out something that it was like just a little. My friend David Lee once said that every poem should have a secret. And I'd like to tell you this poem's secret. I suppose that means it isn't a secret anymore, but there's only one period in the whole poem. But there are many, 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 many commas. I just thought it had to be the case that it would just comma on and on and on. So, mm-hmm. I should count them and see how many commas there are. It's probably a dozen. It's quite a few. Oh, it's not that many. Well, it's a bunch.
Well, and what a What a great representation of how most people's days or weeks or months go, where you feel like there isn't a period. You know, it's just, it's one thing after the next, and we just keep going and going and going. But even when it is crazy, to be able to take that minute or a couple of seconds to just, okay, have that moment and say, okay, I can keep doing this. I'll get through it. We're going to reach that period eventually, even if it's not right now. But I can take a small pause and reset and refresh and keep going.
There's a poem I'd love to read, actually, about what happens when we do pause. It's these poems are all from the beginning of the book, and this one is called I Want to Listen to Your Absence. And it's a poem about what's possible when we're not rushing around. I want to listen to your absence. I want to listen to your absence the way I listen to the night, the way the dark somehow invites a deeper listening. I want to hear, for instance, the way silence fills in where your voice has been, or the way the room seems to know itself by the sound of missing footsteps. And in this way, I find you where I cannot find you. I am thinking of how the night opens up between the calls of the owl and how I listen in that interval, not only with my ears, but with my skin. I want to listen for you with my lungs, as if every breath is attentive to the syllables of grief, of love. I want my heart to angle in, to hear what the silence has to say. I don't want to hear what I most want to hear. I want to hear what is really here. I want to listen and learn from the listening. I want to listen into your absence and lean into it the way I lean into the night. Something so much larger than me, something familiar and always new, something so present yet unable to be touched. I want to hear what is true.
Thank you for sharing that. That was another one I had a sticky note on. But that sense of truth in our lives, I think that's another one that is really hard to stop and pay attention to at times. To not, like it says in the verse, to hear what's really there, not what you want to hear.
That's a hard thing to want, too, right? To want against ourselves, that paradox.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and in a way, maybe what I was hoping was I wanted to hear Finn, my son, talk to me. Right. I wanted a message. Right. I wanted to know, are you here? What's it like? Are you OK? But I didn't want to hear that if it was me making it up. Right. I wanted to hear what's really here, which is his absence. I think one thing that interests me, Dalshree, is that, you know, we talk all the time about how writing is a practice of finding our voice. But I think that's not quite true. I think that writing, first and foremost, perhaps, is a practice of finding our ears. Listening is the first practice. Until we do that, whatever we have to say isn't that interesting.
I think that's very true.
It's become more and more true for me. I've understood it in a new way, I think, in the last year and a half.
I think that's a great thought to carry in your life and also in a writing practice. I think most of us could definitely take more time to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Rosemary, I feel like I could probably spend the entire day going through each and every one of these poems with you. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I did want to just remind our listeners that the book is called All the Honey by Rosemary Wattola Trommer, and just remind people where they can find you and the book and keep an eye out for your work and everything that you share.
Well, you can find All the Honey at any local bookstore. You can ask them to order it if they don't have it, or bookshop.org or the other online place where people buy things. And then, of course, you can find the daily poems on my blog, 100fallingveils.com. And I also have, this is so exciting, an app on your phone. It's called The Poetic Path, and it's through Ritual. So if you find the Ritual app, I do this daily poem where I read a poem and talk about where it came from, read it again. That's the whole practice. But then if you want, I also do offer prompts for doing your own writing or conversing or thinking. Each episode is about 6 minutes long. I'm so excited about that. And people can find that again on the Ritual app on your phone.
is really neat. I have not heard of someone trying that before, so I will check that out. But Rosemary, thank you so much for sharing your work with me and for taking the time to talk to me today. I enjoyed this so much.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.